Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening this morning. We're also pleased to have back on the show Sandy Mason from U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's a horticulture educator, and in the spring and summer and into the early part of the fall, she is here every month. It's always on a Tuesday. To take whatever questions you might have about things that grow in the home landscape. We can talk about trees or shrubs, flowers, vegetable plants, the turf grass, whatever you have. Also houseplant questions, too. The idea is here, maybe you got some sort of a problem, you're not quite sure how to deal with it, she can give you some advice. Maybe you're thinking, I don't know if at this point people are planting things, or maybe you're thinking about some things you might plant in the fall or next year, and you're looking for some suggestions or, you know, anything like that, you are invited to call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. We'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL. Toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us once again.
Glad to be here. Also glad to be here because the temperature is a little nice.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
You feel like gardening.
Not bad at all. I could do yard work. Sure. Why not? No, I know you said, you came in, you sat down, you said no big announcements, but...
But I always, there's always something there.
Well, I know that you wanted to talk about the website. The extension website, because there is a place where there's lots and lots of good information, various kinds. Some of the sorts of things that we talked about here, but not just with you, with Marianne and Phil Nixon and,
sure,
you know, all sorts of different topics. And if people do, they can get onto the internet. They might want to check it out because they could pick up some information there.
Sure. And I'll give you that site. It's www.urbanext.uiuc.edu. So it's urbanext.uiuc.edu. So, and you just go into there, and it's called Horticulture Corner, and there's all kinds of information on everything from gardening with annuals. Maybe you have some diseases or insects you need identified. There are actually a couple of places to go for that. Apples are becoming in season now. Maybe you have questions on where to get you pick apples or where to get local apples. Actually, you can go in and check for your area and see if you can see what orchards might be nearby. Container gardening, strawberries, the miracle of fall. Don't you love that?
It seems like,
will it ever happen? It must be a miracle. Herb gardening, pumpkins, ornamental grasses, fantastic foliage. So actually, if you were there maybe a month or so ago and really had checked it all out, you'll find there's actually some new things on the Hort Corner. So I would check out the U of I's extension website, Horticulture Corner.
Okay, very good. And now we have some folks to talk with. So let's start with someone in Charleston. That's on line number 4. All right, here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Sandy, I'm about to hang up and just go check the website.
Oh, well, okay.
No.
What's your question? And then check the website.
I've got three questions for you, and they're hopefully real short. The first is I have purchased a little rose bush from a local nursery, and I put it in a spot where I wanted to put it, where we will be building later.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told by a friend that, you don't like to transplant roses. So I'm wondering now whether I should keep it in the pot, mm-hmm, or put it down there and move it a year later, or what?
Yeah. Now, is this a miniature rose, or is this a shrub rose?
I think it's a shrub.
A shrub rose? Yeah. Actually, shrub roses you might be able to get away with a little bit. But actually, as roses age and as they are there for a while, as in several years, you might find they are more difficult to move. So are you talking about, you know, moving this in a couple years or 10 years? Or?
Well, about 1 year.
Oh, well, that shouldn't be too bad as far as moving it, to tell you the truth. I think it's easier trying to do that than actually trying to keep it in a pot,
right,
over the winter, because then you'd have to really mulch it in or maybe sink the pot or something to try to make sure that it doesn't get too cold.
Right.
So that might actually be more difficult. So I think if it's just going to be there for a year, I think you'll be fine.
Okay. The second deals with tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't hear this until now from my aunt out in California. She says, don't water them too much. You just get leafy tomatoes. But you don't get much tomato. Is that a...
So you're finding that to be true? Or?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just heard it. I have leafy tomatoes that I've been watering.
Yeah.
Most of the summer, but...
Actually, probably what we notice more as far as leafy tomatoes is if you're fertilizing them quite a bit with nitrogen. They really are ones that respond well to nitrogen, but how they respond is they produce all this lush foliage and not a whole lot of flowers and fruit. So I definitely would watch my fertilization. But as far as watering, I think they all appreciate even watering, as in I would say once a week, an inch of water a week is really plenty.
Okay.
So if you're doing much more than that, then you probably don't need to, but you'll find that you'll have a lot, at least in our area, I don't know about California, but at least in our area, you'll have a lot less like blossom end rot, which is often happens because we get this where you water heavy and then you let them go dry for a long time, then you water heavy. That's it actually will make that worse. So you actually find that some of the things will be much better.
Okay.
Just don't overhead water. That's probably the worst thing.
Right. Okay. The last one is I have recently purchased a Myers lemon tree.
Oh.
Just... Can't get the California out of me.
I was going to say, are you moving to California? Is
no,
that what you're
I just missed it so much.
Yeah.
I used to have a paper route where the customers would give me lemons and tips.
Oh, wow.
But I plan on, it's in a small pot. It's in a pot. It's, mm-hmm. it's about 3 feet, 4 feet high. It's got mm-hmm. some lemons on it already. But I'm planning on having this thing to bring during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that something that is actually going to be successful?
Sure, sure. You can certainly do it. I think what you'll find is, I don't know, you really need it still a fairly sunny environment even in the wintertime. So hopefully you have what would be nice if you had a greenhouse or something. But if you at least have like a sunroom or something where it's going to get light from several different areas, you know, several different directions, that will help. So, you know, the light will be one issue. The other thing I've noticed is they do tend to be somewhat susceptible, and you're really going to have to watch this, to some insect problems in the wintertime. So you're really going to have to watch for spider mites, especially, but also scale and mealybug. So unfortunately, those guys really can get some insect problems in wintertime. But other than that, I think you'll find it kind of goes dormant in the winter. They don't really do a whole lot, but you can certainly do it.
Right.
So
okay.
Good luck.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks Bye-bye. For the call. And maybe one thing is worth mentioning, when you bring a plant in from outside, it may not seem to you like the light is very much different.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
as far as
yeah.
the plant's concerned, it could be a big difference between being outside and getting good sun for a lot of the day and then coming inside, even if you have a sunny place to put
right,
it.
Right, absolutely.
So you need to, if you can, bring it in stages where mm-hmm. progressively, if it's going to get less light, you allow it to get used to getting less light.
Right, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. That's a really good point, to make sure that they sort of get acclimatized to that lower light. And if you can actually give them some supplemental lighting, if there's some way that, you know, even an incandescent bulb would help, or at least some supplemental lighting, because, you know, as those days get shorter and stuff, it gets much harder to keep them. So you're right. So it can be a little bit tricky trying to get things in, but it certainly can be done. So.
Okay. Let's go to Gaze, next line number one. Hello.
Hello. I've got two questions. Number one on tomatoes again. I'm originally from Michigan, and I always had a few tomato plants. And this is my first time growing them in Illinois, and the soil is basically clay.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to water them every day or else they wilt. But my question is, I'm getting extraordinarily tough skin on the tomatoes. And in Michigan, I planted them in clay too, because that's what the soil was. But what causes tough skin on tomatoes? And I've noticed other people around have had tough skin on their tomatoes, so it doesn't seem to be traceable to the variety.
I'm not sure why. So this is a different variety, and everybody's still saying the same thing about tough skins.
Best Boy, which is what I have, which I've planted in Michigan, the skin's been normal. Here, it's very tough. And then our next-door neighbor had some Goliaths, and they were pretty tough.
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth, if there's a certain environmental condition. It kind of sounds that way, doesn't it, that might cause those tough skin on tomatoes. Maybe there's someone else out there that might have some ideas on that. But I don't know of anything that actually would cause a tough skin other than different varieties. You'd certainly see that from variety to variety. Beyond that, I'm not sure what to tell you.
Okay. Question number two. My sister recently moved from Michigan again. She had African violets and I think it's called chincholo.
Calancho or calanchoe. Mm-hmm.
And they bloomed regularly for her. She had them in Eastern Sun in Michigan. Now she's moved here And they're in western sun, and they're very healthy. They're very green, but you can't get them to bloom.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, those plants are like poinsettias. They actually take a short day, long night in order to bloom.
Uh-huh.
So they're photosensitive to the length of day on those. So it sounds like somewhere along the line, they're not getting the proper day length.
So
I don't know, it can even be interrupted by night lights or whatever. So normally that's why you'll see them usually even around Christmas time and stuff. You'll often see these guys in flower. So they do take a short day, long night in order to bloom.
I bet they're getting too much sun.
They're getting too much sun. The day length is too long, or the sunlight length is too long for them in order to get them into flower.
Okay, so, well, thank you very much.
Okay. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here with us monthly during the growing season while things are really going, and we do this show on lawn and garden care. And if you have plant questions, it can be houseplants, but also we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. Whatever's on your mind. And if you can tell us why the tomato skins are tough.
Skin, I don't know about that one.
I don't know. It's a new one.
Is it a water issue or heat issue? I'm not sure.
Well, if you have an idea or you have other questions,
a theory,
you can call us. We're interested in theories. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And next, someone in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi, it's another tomato question. My vines, the leaves are curling up and turning brown. This happened last year, and I've compared notes with neighbors, and one of them works for horticulture at the university. And he says it's tomato blight and you have to get resistant varieties. Mm-hmm. Well, that's for next year. What can I do this year?
Yeah, actually there's several different diseases that tomatoes can get. And it's amazing that we always end up with lots of tomatoes, even though they seem to be susceptible to a lot of different diseases.
No, last year they actually did die and stop producing.
Yeah, so actually a couple things to look for. When they talk about resistant varieties, they're talking about things like verticillium and fusarium. And those are wilt diseases they're fungal diseases. The fungus is in the soil, so there's nothing you can do about that. So we try to get resistant varieties. And when you buy a variety, it'll say VF or VFN after it to show that it has some resistance to those diseases. And that will normally be where the plant starts to yellow. Sometimes with fusarium, you actually see it on one side where one part of the plant will start to yellow and then they brown and die off. It just basically clogs them up. It's a wilt disease. The other things you will see that are real common this time of year are some leaf diseases. And there's like three different leaf diseases that are real common, at least in our area. And it probably doesn't matter which one it happens to be, but what you will notice is that they get spots on the leaves. And the first thing you'll notice, either the spots are fairly good size or they're real tiny little brown spots. And then the leaf starts to yellow and then brown. And then usually this happens at the lower part of the plant and then it works its way up.
Uh-huh.
And so what I would do is look at the leaves. If there's spots on the leaves, then you have some leaf blight diseases. If there's no spots on the leaves, then it could very well be one of the wilt diseases, which there isn't anything you can do about.
Uh-huh.
The spot diseases, you can certainly do something about. If they're not too far gone, you can use a fungicide spray, a preventative spray. And what it's going to do is it's not going to cure those leaves that already have the disease, but what it will do is prevent further infection on the leaves that are still there.
Wonderful. I'll do it. Thank you so much.
Right.
Okay, thanks. I guess, and also, I don't want to be like Mr. Know-It-All or anything here, but...
You're just so smart. I'd like to think that I had something to do with that, coming here
each month
for the past how many years?
More than we want to really probably talk about. The thing is, as you say, because these things, they're in the soil, then really, if you can possibly avoid it, and I know it may be tough for some people if they just have a small space to put the plants in, you should, if you had a problem last year, don't put the tomatoes back in the same place.
Yeah, you're
because
right.
You may well have the same thing. And they say standard advice is 3 years. You should wait. If you had a disease problem, you should wait 3 years before putting it back in the same place.
Yeah, and then... Well, I'm sorry.
And I'm just saying, but that could be really tough if you don't really have that much space.
Yeah.
If you have one place, I don't know what you do. If you just say, okay, then for the next 3 years, I'm not going to grow any tomatoes, which is kind of sad because You just can't buy them as good as you can grow them.
Well, but certainly looking for those resistant varieties. And normally the label is always going to tell you that. It doesn't mean it's never going to get that disease, but certainly would be some resistance. And also keeping in mind that even within that family, the whole tomato family is going to be susceptible to the verticillium and fusarium. So you don't want to plant peppers there. Don't put eggplant there. Don't put potatoes there. There's several things that you wouldn't want to put there either. So resistant varieties, and hopefully you're absolutely right, doing some crop rotation would really help.
Yeah. All right. We'll go on here. And next is line three, and that's Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have two questions. Number one is I lived in this Springfield for 22 years, planted fragrant roses. They're doing very good. 4 months ago, I moved to California. Is there any way I can cut them and bring, because I don't want to dig them. They're very deep and they're big plants. Could I cut them and take the cutting and they will work or not?
So you want to take the cuttings to California?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure I understood what it was. Number one, you'd want to check with California laws. They're very strict, as they should be, since it's a big horticultural state,
right,
on what their criteria is for bringing in plants.
Okay.
A lot of times, if it doesn't have soil attached, a lot of times you can bring things in, but I honestly don't know. So you'd want to check with the California Department of Ag to make sure, and I'm sure they have a website, and you could find out exactly what's allowed to be brought in. So that's number one. I'd check to see what's legal. Certainly you can take cuttings of roses, and actually it usually works pretty well where you just take a cutting. You can actually, some people actually just put them right back into the soil and then put like a plastic milk jug or something over to sort of make a little mini greenhouse in a shady spot. And then a lot of times though, they will go ahead and root fairly easily. So that might be a good way to move it without having to dig up the whole thing.
Yeah, I didn't check with the California law, but when I was moving on the checkpoint, they opened my truck, and I said, what we are looking for, and they said, for plants.
For plants, see? They're very strict, and I don't blame them. It's a big horticultural state. They, you know, a lot of their economy relies on horticultural products, so I don't blame them at all for being so strict.
They broke a couple of my dishes.
Oh, they broke a couple of your dishes? Well, there's no need for that.
The other question I have about my lawn, I have broadleaf,
a weed or?
Weeds, yeah, a lot of weeds. Is there anything I can spray myself to get rid of them?
Well, I think one thing you have to keep in mind with the weeds is, you know, the weeds come in because the lawn isn't growing real well.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to look at it from a couple different angles. Why isn't my lawn growing very well? Am I doing a good job of fertilizing periodically? Am I watering during drought periods, or am I at least, you know, letting it go dormant when it needs to go dormant or however? But really look at your maintenance practices to see why the grass isn't growing very well. So kind of look at that. You certainly can also do some broadleaf herbicide control. I wouldn't do it now, but actually we're getting into a good time here. Actually, September and October is a good time to take care of a lot of the broadleaf perennial weeds.
Uh-huh.
It's a wonderful time. A lot of times people forget about that, but it's a great time to do, whether you have Creeping Charlie or dandelions or any of those perennial ones. You have all of them. Oh, well, congratulations. so you might think about that, actually doing that. Look at your maintenance program and also think about come September and October that you might want to use a broadleaf herbicide to see if you can get rid of some of those weeds. But then think about how am I maintaining the lawn so it could be healthier and I wouldn't have so many weeds.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And you can check with your local extension office. We have some great maintenance calendars on when to fertilize and what kind of diseases, insects, weeds might be out there. So you might check with your local extension office.
Oh, okay. Thank
All right.
You.
Thank you. We'll go to next caller in Bourbon A, line number four.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I have three questions, if that's okay.
Sure.
First is a problem that I haven't had before in the 6 years I've been here. I've had a window box all those years. Every year I put some annuals in it. This year there's a Gerber daisy and some petunias and some hanging annual. And this year, for the first time, squirrels have started to eat what's in that box.
Mm-hmm.
They've wiped out the petunias. I just noticed this morning they'd wiped out that little hidden annual, and I saw one leaf of the Gerber ripped off. What can I do to keep them from doing that?
Yeah, boy, that's tough. So they're just like jumping there from a nearby tree or something and getting on it that way?
They climb up the picnic table that's right there.
Well, yeah, I just wondered if there's some way you can actually change the environment so they can't get up there quite as easily. And I don't know if there's any place else you can move the picnic table, but, you know, they can jump pretty far, so that may or may not help too much.
Yeah, it's like 4 feet high.
Yeah, so if there's some way you can change the environment a little bit so they're not there, you know, there's not a whole lot of other things you can do other than if you can at least stop them. A lot of times it's sort of a habit thing. A lot of the wildlife kind of get into these habits where they start picking on things. If there's some way you can sort of temporarily put a little chicken wire over it, I know it's not going to look all that great, but hopefully you can just do it for a short period of time and sort of keep them off of it. Is it real dry in your area? I wonder if they're going for it because it's wetter.
Well, we haven't had, you know, we're like 70 miles north of you guys, and
we haven't
had a lot of rain,
dry.
But I water all the time.
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering, sometimes they're going for that succulent stuff because it's a lot more, there's a lot more moisture there than all the other stuff they can eat, so sometimes that's kind of what they're going for. Yeah, so I was thinking if there's something you can do that way, that would certainly help. Like, and I know it doesn't sound all that attractive to put chicken wire or something over it.
Yeah. I once heard that if you put down blood meal, that keeps spores.
Yeah, I certainly have heard that for wildlife problems. It's not going to hurt anything, and is a source of nitrogen. It's not going to hurt anything. But what I've seen is that if it gets wet, even with dew, it doesn't seem to scare them away. So you could certainly try it. There are some other repellent things out there that you certainly could try on these. There's some rabbit and deer repellent that could also be somewhat effective for squirrels.
Yeah.
But boy, they seem to be pretty tenacious sometimes, and that's why sometimes just physical exclusion like that with chicken wire is about your only bet. But you might try some of the repellents. They're certainly available at garden centers and stuff, and see if that doesn't help you.
All right.
Yeah,
thank
it's
you.
Tough.
My next issue is a Scheffleria I have inside. It's probably 10 years old. I have it in a south window, but it doesn't get direct sunlight because there's a big oak tree right outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just straggly, and it's been straggly for years. I've got it in the biggest pot I can find. I feed it, you know, a couple times a month, and it's just straggly. And I'm wondering, if I cut it down, will it come back, or is there something else I could do?
You certainly can cut these guys back. They don't break very well, as in they don't branch out very well. You know, like if you cut off a chrysanthemum, you know, that tends to break a lot of buds and you get a fuller plant. So they're not ones that break real well. But it certainly would bring it down in height and might make it look a lot better just by cutting it back. So you certainly can do that, and it'll probably just send up one more bud. That top bud will go ahead and break and produce a plant. So I'm not sure. So nothing's changed in the last few years as far as the light levels or anything like that. It's always been in this spot.
Actually, the light level has changed, but it's darker now than it had been, but it was like that before.
Yeah. So you might just try the and you're fertilizing it like once a week or
once or twice a month.
Okay. That probably you could probably go a little higher if you wanted to through the summer months where they're getting plenty of light.
Yeah.
And you might find that might help some to sort of increase some of the growth and hopefully get, but usually when they get spindly it's a light issue or over fertilization issue, and it doesn't sound like you're over fertilizing
things. And before that it was in a room that was just all windows, so it had daylight all day.
Has it been repotted lately?
Not lately.
Been the last few years?
No, more like 3-4 years ago.
Yeah. You might really look at it and see if maybe it needs to be repotted. Sometimes that's a real invigorating thing. If you can repot them and maybe cut it back, you'll find that's real invigorating for a lot of the plants.
The last time I did it, it didn't help any because it was
it didn't
like
help?
Before.
Yeah. Maybe it's time for a new Scheffleria.
Well,
sorry.
Okay, is it like a home for old ones?
We should have that, shouldn't we?
We just don't want
to kill them, but, you know, you don't want to. But, yeah, I don't know. I would really, and I don't know what kind of soil mix you have in it. Is it?
I don't either. Potting soil, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I would just make sure it's well-drained, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's not getting
well-drained.
Too wet, that sort of thing. And then it sounds like you're watering it okay, so it's not drying out too much.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. But I would still think about repotting it and cutting it back and see if this doesn't help this one more time and see if it doesn't help.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And
good luck.
Thirdly, I have a couple of amaryllis that have been given me, and I have them inside. They're also in a southwest window, but again, this same oak tree, they don't get direct sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
And they put up leaves, and they're beautiful leaves, but they never bloom anymore.
Mm-hmm. Did you put them through a dormant period or any of that stuff?
Well, no, I just let them do their thing. Like the leaves, the last time the leaves had been there for months, and then they died out, and then like 3 weeks later, it started putting up new leaves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes you almost have to force them into a flowering period, although they will actually flower without doing the forcing thing. But if they're not flowering, you might try it, actually.
What's that?
Well, usually around the end of August or so, we actually stop watering them and really let them dry down.
Yeah.
And then around the 1st of September, then you actually put them in an area where they're going to be cool and dry. So ideally, it'd be nice if you had a basement or a crawl space or someplace where they can just, you can sort of forget about them for a couple months. Yeah, and you actually let them go dormant for 2 months, and then you bring them out, and then they'll hopefully flower at that point.
Okay.
But it sort of gets them into this rhythm, I think, so that they'll flower better for you.
Well, my basement is a little on the damp side. Is that okay?
As long as the plant itself isn't going to be damp. I think if it's a lot of basements are, but as long as the plant itself isn't going to be wet, that shouldn't be a problem.
I don't think so.
Yeah, but it should be cooler, and then you just sort of forget about them. And you don't count the 2 months until the thing is absolutely not a green leaf on it, as in the leaves have completely yellowed down.
Okay.
Then you count your 2 months.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Okay. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Sure thing. A little bit past the midpoint here of this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason from U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's a horticulture educator and is here on the program spring, summer, early fall. Every month we do lawn and garden care. If you have questions, have some kind of problem, we'll see if we can help you out. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Next is back here in our area in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is sort of short and sweet, I think. I want to know, how far back can I cut clematis vines, and when should I do it?
Actually, a lot of it depends on when they flower. When do
they flower? They're those small purple flowers.
Okay.
They've still got a lot of green leaves.
But they're a summer flower?
Summer.
Okay. Actually, with those, normally we'd probably prune those back in the spring.
Okay.
And actually, you can cut them back fairly far if you really wanted to. But
well, they've gone up and up and up, and there's a lot of vine and nothing till they get to the top. And
yeah, it flowers at the top.
Yeah, I want to put a different trellis in for them, too.
Mm-hmm. But normally we'd probably do it in the spring.
In the
early spring, you go ahead and cut them back. And actually, you can cut them back to a couple feet without any problem.
It's more a question of 3 feet.
Yeah. I mean, down to a total height of 2 feet.
4 or 5 feet at the top.
Yeah, so that's fine. But I would do it in the spring, to tell you the truth.
Okay, spring is March, April?
Yeah, March would be fine. April, probably the 1st of April would be fine.
Okay. That's what I needed.
Okay.
Thank you
very much.
We have one light. I think it sounds like that. One of the ones that has a purple flower, and it tends to flower in June.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been in there for a while, and I think it's kind of gotten established. But it sort of confuses me because it sends up a couple new shoots every year, but it also blooms on the old wood.
Right.
And I guess what I have tried to do the last couple of years is just kind of clean it up a little
right.
bit, do a little sort of trimming, make it look better, but not cut the old wood off once I got clued to the fact that it was actually sending new shoots off of there too, not
mm-hmm.
just
right.
the bottom. But something this year got it. I'm not sure what happened to it because it was doing pretty well, and then it seemed somehow to get damaged and it just kind of died.
Was it fairly early in the season when we first started getting hot weather?
Well, it was after it bloomed. It was blooming and was looking pretty good,
yeah.
And then I don't know.
Yeah, they do get a wilt disease, and I don't think pathologists have really quite decided exactly what the wilt disease, but the thing I've noticed is, or what's been reported too, is that they're looking really good, you know, and it's fairly early in the season. And then when we first start getting those hot, dry winds and it gets starts to really warm up, they get basically the whole thing just seems to die back. It just, the leaves get brown and it just wilts.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't kill the whole plant. Then they start sending up new shoots and then they look okay again. And they have reported that there are certain varieties that are more susceptible to it than others. But it seems to be ones, although if this one's never done it before, it seems to be ones that seem to do it every year. And those would be the ones I'd be a little bit concerned about. The Chicago Botanic Garden actually did a really nice fact sheet on the clematis or clematis varieties, on which ones get wilt, which ones don't, that kind of thing.
Well, this is the first time it's done this. In the past,
so
it seems to have done pretty
well. That's what it was or not. Because it does seem to be ones that, because I have one that I planted, this is before I knew all this stuff, that does seem to get it every single year, but then it sends up new shoots and it looks fine. So,
oh, well. Let's go here to somebody on a car phone, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi there. I have a backyard that's entirely garden, so it's plants and shrubs and things, and I'd like to take a section of it and make it more of a lawn sort of area, but I don't want to put grass in. And I was wondering if you could recommend a sort of plant that is low or creeps low to the ground and is thick and lush and you can step on and you're not going to kill it or crush it.
Creeping Charlie?
No, that's the other
section. Oh, no, wait a minute.
You're evil.
There's a use for that. Well, no,
you're evil.
You know, maybe there's a use for that. We just haven't quite figured out what that use is yet. So this is fairly shady then, I take it?
There's a good mix. It's fairly sunny. Some of it's shady, some of it's sunny. I don't know if it would require a shade-tolerant plant.
But you want this to be something that you could step on or walk on and
right,
not a problem.
Like a lawn chair on or something like that.
Yeah, there's actually a whole kind of industry thing right now. These plants called steppables. I don't know if you go into most high-end garden centers, they'll have these things called steppables, and it's all these different little creepy things, and it's everything from thyme. Unfortunately, most of those that I can think of take at least some sun. I don't know of any of those that take absolutely, you know, shade. So you might want to think twice about that if it's a full shade. But there's actually that some of the thymes are actually very nice, and they'll take some traffic without any problem, and they stay really short to the ground and do real well. It needs to be a fairly well-drained spot. They don't take really, really wet soil as well. There's another plant that I really like that does take a wetter soil, and it's called Mazus. It's M-A-Z-U-S.
It's
M as in Mary, A-Z as in Zeke, U-S as in Sandy. And actually, it's really nice. It has a little blue flower. It stays really short to the ground. It does like moisture. It's not one of those that really likes hot, sunny spots, but it doesn't sound like you really have that. So that one might be a real nice one. And it does take some traffic, and it spreads nicely. And so you might look for some of those. There's some little bitty sedums that are also real nice, real short to the ground, take some traffic. So there's
is pennyroyal a candidate for that?
Actually, pennyroyal wouldn't be too bad either, to be honest with you. I'd be real. Do you have cats or dogs or anything?
Cats?
Yeah. I'd be a little concerned about cats. I don't if they tend to be cats that chew on things, or if they're outside, I'd be a little concerned about pennyroyal.
Oh,
there's some issues.
Catnip in the other corner, so.
So they probably wouldn't mess with this?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because that would be the only thing. I'd be a little bit concerned about pennyroyal for that.
Right. The corollary question to this would be, what do you suggest for timing? Should I start it in the fall and expect to do it in the spring, or should I start it in the spring?
I think fall is a great time to get the area prepared. I don't know what you're going to have to do to this area to sort of. Are you going to have to like rip shrubs out, or are you? Oh, really?
Well, maybe not shrubs, but certainly a lot of plants.
I think
really
a fall.
Locate some things.
Yeah, I think fall is a great time for that because you can move a lot of the perennials. They're just fine. So September is really a great month to do those kinds of things, and then you'll be set for spring planting. I'm probably a little bit more geared towards, other than dividing, as far as planting new plants. Not everybody agrees with this, but I'm kind of geared more towards doing spring plantings for a lot of the perennials, unless you do it early enough in September. So,
alrighty.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks
sounds like
so
quite a project.
Okay. Thank you. You know, there's a place that we have been going for a number of years on vacation. We go and rent cottage. people we rent the cottage from, they have their house there. And in the front of the house, what looks like, you know, what you look at it and say, well, it's a lawn, looks like a big lawn area. And I didn't really think very much about it. And a couple of years ago, I was walking across this and looking down, and I realized it was thyme.
Oh, really? The whole
thing?
Yes,
the whole thing was
thyme. Wow, that's beautiful.
And I wondered how in the world you do that. But it seemed to work very well because you can walk on it. It's a little sort of springy. They mow it periodically.
Oh, do they?
And it's very, you know, it's very thick. And it almost, as I say, from a distance, you'd look at it and you would think, well, it was turf grass. But then when you get up close and you look at it, no, it's thyme.
So there are it's thyme is one of those that kind of needs a certain spot. If it's real wet, it doesn't do real well over the winter. So if you find those really perfect spots, they seem to do very well. We have a fairly nice patch out at the Idea Garden. The Master Gardeners do out at the Idea Garden on there on South Lincoln, where we have a sundial. Haha, get it, thyme. Sundial. I don't know. At any rate, and it is just taken over. It's just lovely. So that might be a good suggestion for people who are trying to find those spots where they really don't want to mow all that often.
Yeah, I don't know how many thyme plants you'd need to, you know, to start and how long it would take to fill in a whole lawn.
You know, it is. Yeah, a whole lawn might be another issue. But you could always have those few spots and sort of start out and see how it does for you.
All right. Let's go next to line number two. That's Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question you've probably heard a million times about cucumber beetles on zucchinis. Mm-hmm. I'm ashamed that we can't get a decent crop of zucchinis here in Urbana because the cucumber beetles and I guess the bacterial wilt that follows it just kill them off every year. The only summer squash that seems to survive is a scallop sunburst, which we plant every year and get pretty good scallop squash off of it, but it eventually succumbs. And I'm just, we try to stay fairly organic, and I'm reluctant to dust with 7 sort of prophylactically.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what's the cleverest and current advice you have?
Yeah, it's tough, and it's another one of those that you wonder why people have all these zucchinis, because zucchini is another one that gets all kinds of different insect and disease problems. So you wonder why, you know, how can people do these things?
Well, cucumbers as well. I mean,
cucumbers
are both very hard here.
Yeah. The thing that, especially if you're trying to go organic, because we don't have a whole lot of organic things. Certainly, rotenone is something that's listed and is often listed as something that's or as an organic control because it is a botanical. But it certainly still has its concerns about the problems that it can also kill off beneficial insects and all those kinds of things. So there's certainly it's not the cure all either. The one thing that you can do and it makes it a little bit more difficult because of the squash and cucumbers and stuff have to be pollinated, cross-pollinated by insects. But you can use these what are called floating row covers. I don't know if you're familiar with these. It's kind of the spun bond white stuff.
Right.
And you can get summer grade of that, and that's what it's called, summer grade. And so it can be used. It does let light in. It does let moisture in when it does rain. And it's about the only way you can actually protect them. But the problem is, of course, you almost have to go in there and act like a bee and actually pollinate things.
Right. The prospect of physically keeping them out, which is what we've actually had to resort to with raspberries to keep the Japanese beetles off, is not... I mean, that works there, but I do worry about the pollination issue on the cucurbits. Yeah.
Right, which you certainly would have to. And so it does take a little bit more maintenance for you, but it may be your only alternative if you're still wanting to grow these plants and wanting to do it organically. So I know it's not very exciting, but it may be... maybe the route to go. What I have seen people do sometimes is they actually leave the row covers on most of the time, and then periodically they pull them back, and then hopefully at a time when they think the bees are going to be active, and then hopefully you get some pollination that way. So you're kind of just hoping, and then they periodically put it back, but then you still have a certain amount of cucumber beetles that are now inside the floating row cover. So there's some evils to that, too, as well.
But no brilliant new varieties.
Sorry.
I
wish. I would be so rich. I would be so rich if I could come up with a cure-all for Japanese beetles, cucumber beetles. Let's see. What are the other things?
Powdery mildew.
Actually, there are some of those.
There are?
You can find some of those.
That would extend the season a few weeks for those.
Oh, sure. There are some you can get. And actually, again, Chicago Botanic Garden did a really nice fact sheet on different types of Monarda, rated them for powdery mildew resistance. And I actually have a copy of that in my office. If you want to check out the Champaign County Extension office, I can mail that to you if you like.
That's great.
And so we do have that. So see? I solved one problem, maybe, sort of. Couldn't help you with too much of the other stuff.
Otherwise, but, it's a farmer's market for zucchini.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
It really is tough.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
okay.
Good luck.
Got about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. If you have lawn and garden questions, you can call us 333-WILL or 9455, toll-free 800-222-WILL. You got to get on that Japanese beetle thing.
Yeah, I know.
She's going to be down there in the basement working in the laboratory. Be midnight.
Can you see me?
Her husband's going to call down the stairs. Look, it's midnight. Come on. Forget the Japanese beetle thing. And she says, no, I'm almost there.
I've got it. And Creeping Charlie. That would
Creeping
be the other one.
Oh, yeah.
Japanese beetle, Creeping Charlie.
All right.
I'd be rich.
We're working on
I'll
that.
Let you know when
okay.
I get that.
Okay, good. We can have an exclusive.
There you go.
Yeah. Next is Chicago, line 3. Hello.
Good morning. Hello.
Hi, yes. Good morning.
Hi. I talked to you some time ago about a Kalanchoe.
Mm-hmm.
Plant, and it gets kind of long stems with leaves on the end. If I cut those off and put them in soil, would I have another plant?
Sure. They actually root fairly easily. Now, because you're not talking about the flower stalks, you're actually talking about the leaf stalks. Yeah, you can actually, those root fairly easily.
If I put 3 or 4 in one pot, would that work out all right?
That looks even better, to tell you the truth.
All right. And how do you get a Christmas cactus to grow? You know, the supermarket plant.
Mm-hmm.
It just stays like it always is.
So it's not growing for you at all, but it looks okay?
It's okay, but it doesn't get any larger.
Yeah. Even though they're called cactuses, they really are not ones that like to be super dry.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if you're watering on a fairly regular basis. Once a week?
Yes.
Yeah, that should be fine. I would check. Has this been in the same pot for a long time? Or
no, I put it in a larger pot.
Okay, so that's fine. Have you tried fertilizing it at all?
Well, the one you buy in a little bottle and you add a cupful to a gallon of water that you buy in the supermarket.
Right. I would certainly fertilize it through the summertime. That's a good time to really get some new growth on it.
Try that.
And they also, I usually just stick them outside underneath a tree or something. They like fairly bright light but not direct light. So you should be seeing some pretty good growth on them this time of year.
I'm facing north so I don't get any sun at all.
See, that's probably part of the problem. They probably need, if there's somewhere you can find a little brighter spot for them, that might help. But they should be putting on fairly good growth now. You're not going to see that so much in the wintertime. And then, of course, they do take they take those shorter days, longer nights and in order to bloom.
And the Kalanchoe, you water that once a week. Is that enough?
That should be fine. They're one of those that actually you can let them go a little bit dry on the dry side, but I wouldn't let them go too. You don't want them to start wrinkle up like they will if they're too.
Thank
dry.
You very much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. And let's see. Next should be Peoria, line 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do for blossom rot on the tomatoes?
Yeah, boy, good question. They really have found that. The part of the problem is if they go wet to dry kind of thing. So if you're watering it and then you don't water for a couple weeks and then they get watered again, so that kind of uneven watering will make it worse. It's actually, a lot of it has to do with the environmental conditions, which we obviously don't have control over. When we start getting really humid days and nights and hot weather and stuff, that's often when it'll start to happen. Some varieties seem to get it worse than others. And that's also the other thing, is just sometimes variety selection. So what can you do? I would mulch them. I don't know if you have them mulched with anything, I don't know, straw or grass clippings or whatever you happen to have out there. I would mulch them to try to help the watering. Make sure that you water them on a regular basis. Once a week, thorough watering would help. There really isn't, although sometimes you'll see people will recommend like calcium nitrate sprays, but that really doesn't help unless you're actually spraying them on the tomatoes when they're very small, about the size of a grape. So once they get much bigger than that, the calcium nitrate sprays don't really work very well. So I would really look at the other things that you can do to try to keep that from happening. So mulching, not doing too much pruning on them, making sure that you're not damaging the roots through hoeing or tilling, that kind of thing. So... And a lot of it has to do with, you know, and it's like right now, it's a lot less humid. The environment changes, and so those few that come on after that then, or those many that come on after that, are okay. So a lot of times you just kind of have to wait out the environmental conditions.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, good luck.
To Oakwood, line one. Hello.
Oh, I have a quick question on phlox. I have a lot of white phlox, and I wanted added some colored ones. And so I, at the Mother's Day flower show in April, I bought a blue one, planted it next to the white ones. And then I decided I wanted some red ones, so I went and got some of those and planted them in late June, early July, that were cut off. And they promptly sprouted out. And the white ones blossomed, and the ones I planted in late June, early July, they sprouted out and blossomed. But this blue one that I planted in April hasn't done really anything, and I'm wondering whether what I should have done. It's in the same conditions as the other two and the others, and just sort of, it's still there. It's just sort of sitting there and growing.
So, but it is growing somewhat?
Well,
isn't that flower?
It looks a lot like it did when I actually planted it. I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't look like it put out a lot of any new growth for any degree, anyway.
Now, the one thing that I've noticed about phlox and actually some of the other perennials as well is that some, a lot of times that first year, they put down, you know, you can't really tell, but they're putting down a lot of roots. But they don't send up a whole lot of new shoots, so you don't get a whole lot of top growth. But then the next year, then they take off. And I wonder if that's not what you're seeing there, especially if you've, you know, if it still seems like it's doing okay. I have a feeling it's probably sending out a lot of roots and it just needs some more time. And I think next year it'll probably look just fine and you'll be happy with it.
The ones I planted so much more recently had grown out and blossomed, and the one that had been there for several months more
Didn't do anything. Yeah, that is kind of surprising, even though they might even be different species sometimes on the phlox. So I don't know if you're seeing some differences that way. But I have a feeling that's probably what's going on. It just needs a little bit more time.
Just wait.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Champagne line two. Hello.
Yeah. I've got some kind of problem with my broccoli. It acts as though it had skipped making heads.
So it just sort of takes off and doesn't produce. It's not a tight head.
There's sort of no heads at all.
Yeah. It's probably the heat, to tell you the truth.
Uh huh.
Especially if you have it now. When did you plant it?
Oh, I'm not sure I can remember. Back in June sometime.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest, when it gets real hot, what you'll notice is the heads open up and they don't even produce much of a head at all. And I have a feeling that's probably what's going on. It's just the heat.
Okay. Is it worthwhile keeping the plants now? Or
I think, you know, this late, I think what I would probably do is, so they're not forming any kind of a head, but they still look okay?
Well, they look as though they had made the heads and have little side heads.
Okay. Because, you know,
they don't amount to much.
Yeah, I would think, I wouldn't quite give up on them yet because we could hopefully get into some cooler weather in the not too distant future. So I think I would just probably cut those off. I probably wouldn't let them go to flower, just cut off even the small buds. And then a lot of times they will continue to send up side shoots. And so hopefully by the time cool weather rolls around, you'll finally start getting some side shoots. But probably in the future, the earlier you can get the broccoli in, the better. I mean, you could actually plant it the first of April if you wanted to.
Okay, so what I should cut off is the things that look like they're side shoots but don't amount to much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I have the same kind of, well, not the same problem, but my collards also have been terrible.
Yeah, you know, those are really cool. Both of those are really some kind of cool weather plants.
Okay, so once again, in that case, if I just let the plants be, maybe they'll come back?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're kind of on the edge here. But I would say, yeah, I would just wait because we could certainly even do fall vegetable gardening. And so you may find that they'll actually start to recover once we get into some cooler temperatures.
I must jump in here. I'm sorry. I must apologize to the caller, but we're at the end of the time. We're going to have to stop. Sandy will be back next month. We'll do it again. In the meantime, if you can get get on the internet, you can look at the website we mentioned at the beginning of the show, the Urban Extension website, and there's lots of good information there for you too at www.urbanext.uiuc.edu. And Sandy's got columns on there and a lot of other information. Well, thanks very much.
Uh-huh, thank you.
Sandy Mason is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.